Well, we start today, as indicated, a new series on the book of Judges. And the book of Judges is a little bit like the works of Shakespeare. We've all heard of Shakespeare, but not many people have read him. And it's probably the same. Well, we know little bits about it. Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou? I say that because I'm an old romantic. It's our 50th wedding next month. How about that? Is that? dear, this has all been recorded. To be or not to be. We've heard that quote, haven't we? To live or to die. To be alive or not to be alive. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely. We've all, and perhaps it's the same with Judges. Well, we know little, but we can quote little bits. We know that Samson's there, the strongest man. Well, there he is in the book of Judges. We've heard Gideon and his fleece. Remember the story of how he wanted guidance from God? And he said, I'll put a fleece out. I'll put a sheep's fleece out. And if that fleece is dry and all the land round is wet, I'll know that it... And then it was dry and the grass was wet. So he said the next day, he said, well, let's do it in reverse and then I'll really know. And that's in the book of Judges. So we know little bits, but we don't really know much about it. It's a closed book, let's be honest. And one of the reasons perhaps is because it's been described as one of the saddest books in the whole Bible. It's a very sad book. A very sad book because it tells of Israel, God's chosen people, sinning, being punished, if you like, and the punishment is that they get attacked by the neighbouring nations. Then they repent, they cry out to God for mercy, and God raises up judges, deliverers, saviours, they're actually called with a small s, and then they get the victory. And it's there's stories in the book of Judges of about a dozen judges who come. It's the same pattern that happens time and time. It's like when you're perhaps small, I don't know. The only thing I could think of was if you get caught smoking, you know, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. You get a good clip round the ear hole, but, you know, you won't do it again and you're so sorry and all the rest of it. And then eventually you get forgiveness from your mum and dad. And you get your pocket money again. And what do? And it's this, and this is what was happening time and time. They sinned. They got punished. They sought forgiveness. And they did it again. It was just... And it's a sad, sad book, really. And that's what was happening. This cyclic pattern. We'll see this next week in Judges chapter 2 more vividly. That's what I'm going to preach about next week, really, Judges chapter 2. And we'll see how this... But our story begins in Judges chapter 1, verse 1, after the death of Joshua. After the death of Joshua. After a great leader is our title. After the death of this great man, Joshua, this great leader. I'll just spend a moment or two looking at Joshua, realizing that after the death of Joshua, the book of Judges chapter 17 verse 6 tells us, which is the key to the whole book, everyone did as he saw fit. In the book of Judges, it was a bit of a free-for-all. It wasn't a case of one rule for us, one rule for them. It was a case of no rule for anybody. You just did what you did your own thing. And Judges 17 verse 6, everyone did as he saw fit. You just made up your own rules. Did whatever suited you. But Joshua had been a good leader, a great leader. He'd settled the 12 tribes into the nation. And we'll see Joshua throughout the Bible as... First of all, we see him as a soldier. He's first mentioned, there's no need to look at it, well, you can do Exodus chapter 17 and verse 8, and we find there is mentioned when the Amalekites attacked Israel. And it's through prayer that Moses' hands are being held up by Aaron and Hur. And when Moses' hands are held up in prayer, Israel is winning the battle against Amalek. And when Moses gets tired and his hands fail, then the Amalekites get the victory. And it says in Exodus chapter 17, verse 8, when the Amalekites attacked Israel, Exodus 17, verse 13, Joshua overcame the Amalekite army with the sword. He was a great swordsman, a great fighter. We'd see him as a servant as well in Exodus 24. He's described as the servant of Moses. Joshua, the servant of Moses, the assistant of Moses. It wasn't beneath him to be a servant, to be an assistant. He proved he didn't have to be, you know, centre forward or not playing. You know, goal scorer or take the ball home and nobody else can play. He was willing to be in the background. It wasn't beneath him. He was faithful. We see him as a spy in Numbers chapter 13. He tells us that Joshua was one of the, remember, the 12 tribes were sent out to spy out the land to see if they could capture it. And from the tribe of Ephraim, they said, Joshua, you go for us. You'll go. And from the tribe of Judah, they said to Caleb, you go as well. So Joshua and Caleb and the 10 other tribes, representative from the other 10 tribes, they all went in and they spied out the land. And Joshua and Caleb came back and they said, oh, this is, it's easy meat. We can. And the other 10 said, oh, they look bigger, they're strong people. We'd better hold back. And because they hesitated, they had to wander. They didn't take the land first time round. They had to wander then in the desert for 40 years until these 10 leaders died. And only Joshua and Caleb were allowed to cross the River Jordan and go into the promised land. Joshua, a soldier, a servant, a spy. We see him as a leader. If you just turn back to Joshua, the book before Judges is the book of Joshua. Joshua chapter 1, the first 6 verses, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord. The Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant, there he is, Moses is dead. You and all these people get ready to cross the River Jordan into the land I'm about to give to you, to the Israelites. I'll give you everywhere you set your foot, just as I promised. It's the promised land. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, from the great river Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea. No one will be able to stand against you, Joshua, all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, I will be with you. I will never leave you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous. You will lead. You're going to be a leader. You will lead these people into the land I have sworn to their forefathers. So he got them into the land and he settled. He made his mistakes, but he was a great leader. Finally, just this little mini study on Joshua before we get started, really. He was a great teacher as well, because his final role, busy leading and organizing and fighting, but he still had a pastor's heart. Pastoral concern for the spiritual welfare of his people. Numbers 27 verse 17 says, the Lord's people are not like sheep without a shepherd. They had someone there in Joshua who cared for them, who was concerned for them, who would look after them. So that's Joshua, a great leader, a victorious fighter, a humble servant, a courageous spy, a man of pastoral concern. And it's there, Judges 1 verse 1, that our story begins, after the death of Joshua. In fact, if we just set this story, we see how it all fits in historically. The Old Testament tells us the land had been promised. The land of Canaan had been promised to Abraham. That's why it's called the Promised Land, because God had said to Abraham, this land I'm going to give to you. So we have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so we go on through the 12 sons, the famine. They went down into Egypt and became a strong nation, 400 years in slavery. They're still not in the land that the Lord had promised them. This is a long-standing promise. Moses went to Pharaoh in Egypt and said, "Let my people go." And eventually, after the plagues, the Pharaoh agreed and the people were let go and they crossed the Red Sea. Remember, is this ringing bells with you? We know the story. I'm just putting it in context for us. They crossed the Red Sea and it was just a fortnight's journey to Canaan, to the Promised Land. That's when the spies went in and they said, "No, we're not going to go." And God said, "No, you're going to have to wander around." So they wandered around Sinai for 40 years. And there it was that Moses died and Joshua became their leader. And they'd been given clear instructions to go in and to... Well, I don't know if you can take any more. Let me just read Deuteronomy chapter 7. This will be our final major reference, if you like. Deuteronomy chapter 7 and the first five verses. "When the Lord brings you into the land that you are entering to possess it, and drives out before you the many nations living there," this is Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1, he mentions the various nations that are living there. He says there's the Hittites, the Girgashites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites, in other words, the inhabitants, you know, the Cornish, the Devonians, the... Somerset, what's the Dorset ones? Thickheads, are they called, or something like that? The numbskulls, the, you know, that's what he's saying. The Lord is going to drive them all out to you. Seven nations, they're bigger and stronger than you are, but when the Lord your God has delivered you, and delivered them over to you, and you have defeated them, you must destroy them totally. Make no treaty with them. Show them no mercy. Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons, or take your sons away from, or your daughters from their sons, for they will turn your sons away from following me and serving other gods. And the Lord's anger will burn against you and will quickly destroy you. This is what you are to do. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, cut down their goddess poles, burn them, and their idols in the fire." They were to go in other words, and totally get rid of the people who inherited the land. They were to do it. So Joshua takes them in. And this soldier leader is very successful in driving out the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Girgashites, all the rest of them. In fact, a major theme of Judges is taking the land, invading. So here you are, you're invading the land, and the Canaanites say, "Okay, fair cop, the Lord has promised it." No, they didn't. They said, "The Lord's told you, he's not told us. We're going to fight. We're not going to give it to you. It's going to be a battle. We're going to defend what's ours." And Joshua went in. There was warfare, there was battles, there was invasion, and they got the victory as far as they could, and Joshua then divided the land, the promised land, amongst the 12 tribes, the 12 nations. But then, again in Joshua chapter 13 and verse 1, it says, "When Joshua was old," the Lord says, this is Joshua, not Judges, Joshua 13 verse 1, "the Lord said, when Joshua was old, still large areas of the land need to be taken." So the old man Joshua realizes that he's now dying. He gives them a farewell speech. Chapter 23 of Joshua, his farewell speech, and in verse 6 he says, "Be very strong, be careful to obey all that the Lord has written in the book of the law of Moses. Don't turn aside to the right or to the left. Do it all. Do not associate with these nations that remain among you. Do not invoke the names of their gods or swear by their gods. You must not serve them or bow down to them. but you are to hold fast to the Lord your God, as you have till now. Then in verse 11, he says, be very careful to love the Lord your God. But if you turn away and ally yourselves with the survivors of these nations that remain among you, and if you intermarry with them, which they've been told not to do, but if you intermarry with them and associate with them, then you may be sure that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations before you. Instead, they will become snares and traps. That's the title we've been given for next week. These nations, if you don't drive them out, they will become snares and traps for you, whips on your backs, thorns in your eyes, until you perish from the good land which the Lord your God has given you. Stick to the Lord, he's saying. This is Joshua's farewell speech to them, these final words. Do not compromise with these people, with these heathen. And then he dies. And it's here, in Judges 1, verse 1, that our story finally... Sorry, it's taken me 20 minutes to get to where we begin. But that's the background. This great leader, after the death of Joshua, that's when it all starts. In other words, it starts at a national crisis. The leader has died. The leader has died. And the people very wisely pray, chapter 1 and verse 1, they unite in prayer, and they pray... The Israelites asked the Lord, and they accepted that they needed to do the Lord's will and to fight for the land and take the land. After the death of Joshua, the Israelites unitedly asked the Lord, who will be the first to go and fight against the Canaanites? They set off well. They have to go in, and they have to wipe out the nations and settle. So they set off, tribe after tribe. And then, I don't know if you noticed, as we read chapter 1 and verse 19, follow it through, we'll stick mainly in Judges chapter 1 now. Verse 19, when they went in, verse 19, the Lord was with the tribe of Judah. They took possession of the hill country, but they were unable to drive the people from the plains because they had iron chariots. They had better military, they were better equipped. They didn't drive the people out. Look again at verse 21. The tribe of Benjamin failed to dislodge the Jebusite people who were living in Jerusalem. And in fact, to this very day, the Jebusites live with the tribe of Benjamin. Look at verse 27. The tribe of Manasseh did not drive out the people of these places or their surrounding settlements. Look at verse 29. Neither did the tribe of Ephraim drive out the Canaanites. Verse 30. It's exactly the same. Neither did the tribe of Zebulun drive out the Canaanites. Verse 31. It's the tribe of Asher. They didn't drive out the people living in the cities there either. Verse 32 says the same thing. They didn't drive them out. Verse 32, neither did the tribe of Naphtali drive out those living in Beth Shemesh. And verse 34, the Amorites confined the tribe of Dan to the hill country. In other words, they didn't do as they were told. They were told to drive them out, to kill them, to totally destroy, but they didn't. All these verses we've just said, as it's explained to us, they didn't drive them out. They didn't do as... It was only a partial victory. It was only a partial obedience. Two things. First of all, Judges chapter 1, verses 4 to 7. Partial obedience. When Judah attacked the Lord, you screwed your nose up when I read this the first time. The Lord gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hands, and they struck down 10,000 men at a place called Bezek. But it was there they found King Bezek, and they fought against him, putting to rout the Canaanites and the Perizzites. King Bezek fled. They chased him and caught him. And what have they been told to do? to kill him. That's what he'd been told to do. That's what we'd spent this last 20 minutes saying, to destroy, to get rid of. What did they do? It says, they caught King Bezek, and they simply cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And King Bezek said, well, it's payback time. I've done this. I've caught 70 kings, and I've done this. It's a pagan practice, cutting off thumbs and toes. He said, I've done exactly the same thing. It's payback time. And so they simply brought him back to Jerusalem. He lived there, and that's when he died. It was partial obedience. They'd been told to kill him, but they simply cut off his... It is a bit gruesome, but if we're in a military situation, it was a good way of disarming him, wasn't it? If you can't hold a sword anymore, if you can't hold a bow and arrow, really, it was a brutal way, but it meant that he couldn't handle a bow or a sword. But it was a pagan practice. The men of Judah had been commanded to put them to death. But now they were actually drawing their standards from the neighbour. That's what the pagans did, cut off thumbs and toes. And they were getting their standards from these surrounding nations. They were already adopting Canaanite practices, the very thing they had been told not to do. If Israel had fully obeyed this command, it would have saved them a lot of trouble. That's what we're going to look at next week, really, because the nations became snares and traps and thorns in their eyes. You know, it was only partial obedience, but also it was a lack of faith, and it meant it was a lack of power as well. Lack of faith and lack of power. Verse 19, did you notice? I did emphasize it, actually, because I knew what I was going to say. Verse 19, the Lord was with the men of Judah. They took possession of the hill country, but they were unable to drive the people from the plains because they had iron chariots. In other words, they had better military, they were better equipped. I'm not going to, you know, you might think, well, Russia and Ukraine, you know, there's all these, and you look at the size of Russia, if you like. I'm not making a political statement or drawing any prophetic significance, but, you know, it was a David and Goliath situation. These people, they've got iron chariots. We've only got swords. You know, we've got our thumbs, but the sword's no good against these iron chariots. We can't do it. And humanly speaking, that was a logical thing. The Canaanites had superior military technology, and it gave them the advantage. But if you just turn back to Joshua chapter 17, you'll see what God had promised. Joshua chapter 17 and verse 17 says this, verses 17 and 18. Joshua 17. Joshua said to the house of Joseph, that is to the tribe of Ephraim and the tribe of Manasseh, you are numerous and very powerful. You will not only have one allotment, but you'll have the forested hill country as well. Clear it out, and its farthest limits will be yours. Listen, though the Canaanites have iron chariots, and though they are strong, you can drive them out. They'd been promised, yeah, they're better equipped than you are. They are the Goliaths. They have these iron chariots, but you will do it. You will do it. That's the promise of God. You will, but you've got to believe. And they proved to have a lack of faith. They didn't believe. They didn't believe. And the real reason why Judah didn't have victory was because they didn't fully trust God. A lack of obedience. They cut off thumbs and toes. They didn't destroy them totally. Lack of faith. These iron chariots look bigger and better. The lesson of Judges chapter 1, as we draw things to a close, you've listened very well this morning. The message of Judges chapter 1 is clear. The people of God deliberately chose to obey God partially. Or put another way, they didn't choose to trust God fully. rather than following the Lord wholeheartedly, they compromised. And they quickly went from conquest, from victory, to compromise. And from compromising with the surrounding nations to coexisting with them, to living with them, really. It was a downward spiral. Instead of doing as they were told, they sunk lower and lower. One final comment. We do not always enjoy the peace that the Lord has promised because we do not do exactly what he commands. We do not always enjoy the peace that the Lord has promised because we do not do exactly what he commands. So the application, what about our lives? Do we not have the peace of God in our heart because we know that we're not doing what he's told us to do? He's not telling us to kill in that sense, but he's probably telling us to kill a habit, or it could be anything. It could be whatever the Lord is saying to you, something that you've been told to do and you're not doing. Partial obedience. We are to wholeheartedly. Yeah, the enemy chariots, they look big. Oh, it'd be a difficult thing. He tells us to witness, doesn't he? To tell, oh, that's a big thing. That looks like an iron chariot. I couldn't tell people about God, about church. He said, I'd be with you. Obey me. Don't lack in faith on this matter. Do what you're told. Well, I'm gonna leave it there and pray God's blessing upon us each one. A difficult subject, really, in many sense, but so true in our own hearts and lives, really. And as we read through the book of Judges, we'll see this pattern next week, certainly, and how, if we don't get rid straight away, it'll come back and haunt us for the rest of our lives. So we need to trust and obey. 760, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. When we walk with the Lord in the light of his word, what a glory he sheds on our way. While we do his good will, while we obey his good will, he abides with us still and with all who will trust and obey. 760.